are the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you for being with me today. I'm going to play a recording of an interview with my friend 2020 and a man named Jeff Nash. So you're not going to hear much from me this hour. Jeff Nash was kind enough to allow me to play this interview, and you can also find it on his YouTube channel, which is Habilitat Hawaii. And Jeff Nash is the creator of a rehabilitation treatment facility in Hawaii. And the discussion is going to start out with 2020 and Jeff Nash speaking about addictions. And so, but it's also going to go into a lot of the stuff that 2020 talks about. Neville Goddard, he's been on the show a couple of times already so far. And I really like what he has to say. And I was going to play a repeat today. And then I saw this interview. So, and they kindly are allowing me to play it. So I thought it would be really of value to you. There's a lot of good information. And I also am going to be changing the format of the show, and I would really appreciate your feedback. I want this to be your show, a show that's really going to help you and make a difference in your life. So feel free, while the interview is playing, please do give me a call, 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-2487. Or you can always email me, spiritualshow@gmail.com. I'm going to be moving away from spirituality and more towards psychology and things that are more just proven to work for happiness. I want the show to be a lot more about happiness and practicality. I'm sure there will be some spiritual overlap because spirituality kind of runs through everything in my life, but I'm really wanting to focus more on practical things that people have used and actually have worked for them and for other people, countless people. So if there are things that you would like me to cover in the show, please do give me a call, 604-822-2487. Like I said, I want you to share your ideas and have an investment in this show, because you, without the show, without you, there wouldn't be a show. So feel free, again, give me a call, 604-822-2487, while this interview is playing. And yes, the name is Jeff Nash, and Mr. 2020. You can find Mr. 2020 at freeneville.com. And I have got to find the Habilitat, I believe it's habilitat.com. But the YouTube channel is Habilitat Hawaii. And yes, it's habilitat.com. It's a long-term drug rehabilitation, and they will touch on that. I'm also going to be inviting Jeff Nash to the show to talk about his treatment facility and how it can help people. So enjoy the interview. Here is 2020 and Jeff Nash, straight from 20's home in Australia.
Good afternoon, mate.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
It's a pleasure to finally meet you.
Yeah, ditto.
I'm really excited. So why don't you tell everybody where we are and what we're doing here, and then we'll have a little talk and see where it goes from there.
Absolutely. We're in Eltham, Australia, which is a suburb of Melbourne, and just had a fantastic day today. Jeff rocked in probably about 10 o'clock or so, and tonight we're just going to sit, share some stuff, see what comes up in the mix, and it's really, nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice to connect with you in person, and reach back out to our friends out there.
Very good. So the people at Habilitat know, but for those that don't, I stumbled upon you while looking for resources for the people at Habilitat to find creative ways to help them overcome the problems associated with addiction. And I came across, of course, some videos that you made quite a while ago.
Yep.
And ordered them online and then watched them and was intrigued. And across, of course, some videos that you made quite a while ago.
Yep.
And ordered them online and then watched them and was intrigued. And really sparked my interest with the whole hypnosis thing. And then I did some research and read around and found out that you'd actually done some work with addicts as well. And then contacted you on Facebook and we sparked up a friendship.
Yep.
And it was a Facebook friendship. However, as the cards were dealt, I ended up here in Australia, and here we are today.
Yep.
So, in the past, you've made some videos for the folks at Abilitat, and they really enjoy those. So today, we're going to provide some more information for those people and see what we can do to help out. If you could briefly, maybe give us an overview of your experience and maybe tell everybody what it is that you do, and briefly, you know, what is a day like for Mr. 2020, and what are you into these days?
Cool. I'll do a little start with the background. When I was 23 years old, I was working as a prison guard at Camp Hill State Prison in Pennsylvania, and I was taken hostage in a prison situation. And that led to a diagnosis of PTSD and all sorts of fun flashbacks, nightmares, pretty hellish existence. And because of all that, I really got deep into a couple things, neuro-linguistic programming, Native American wisdom traditions, the work of a fellow called Neville Goddard. And what all three had in common had to do with how your way of perceiving affects your life. And you know, the more flexible you are with your mental strategies, and the more aware you are of what's going on inside and outside, literally the happier and more natural your life's going to be. So a big part of the work that I've found myself doing over the past 20 plus years is just noticing how do we become more natural. We're not here to be miserable. We're not here to struggle. We're not here to be awkward. And so many people go through life miserable, struggling, or awkward, or finding a way to eliminate the symptoms of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating experience. Just working and playing every day with you're trying to answer the question: how do we get out of our own way? How do we become more natural? And what's really possible for us? Because I think the average person is so stuck on what's probable for them that they never discover what's possible for them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some magic with just making some tiny little changes like that. It's not even positive thinking versus negative thinking, but it's probable thinking versus possible thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's just little tiny shifts I would have never imagined when I was 23 years old ending up here. I found home here, and I couldn't have imagined a couple of years ago meeting you online, you sitting here next to me and going, "Hey, dude, let's let's talk to some people and have some fun and make a difference." So,
it's amazing, and an amazing country you have here. I mean, I can understand why you've stayed here because it's a beautiful place.
Yes.
So, your work with addictions, if you could. Maybe just say a few words about your opinions about, the thing is in America, and from what I gather, even here in Australia, the big thing is to treat addiction as a disease, and the whole disease model has evolved, and, everybody's jumped on the bandwagon with that, the big pharma and the doctors and whatnot, and in my opinion, it's really exacerbated the problem, made it worse. But working as you have with people's minds and understanding their minds and how all that works, what is your opinion about the whole problem in our society with addiction? And what are your opinions on what people in my shoes that are working explicitly with addictions?
Yeah.
What is your take on that?
It's like poverty. People say, the cure for poverty is money.
Mm.
The symptom of poverty is lack of money, or a symptom of poverty is a lack of money.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the cause. So it's so easy to go, let's fix the symptom. Yeah, so yeah, and everybody wants to hit the lotto.
Mm-hmm.
If I hit the lotto, I'll be rich. No, you won't. If you hit the lotto, you're going to have money,
mm-hmm.
which probably ain't going to last because you haven't changed your way of perceiving, your thinking, your mental strategies.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we were talking earlier about when I was working with people to stop smoking.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that showed up was for a typical smoker, smoking is very important for their social strategy. It's how they gain rapport. It's what they do when they connect with people. And I have no judgment against smoking for or against. I smoke cigars. I smoked really cigarettes for a couple of years. Now I just do this vape thing.
Vapes.
But if you want to stop smoking, and you've got to realize, where does it fit into your life? If smoking is part of your social strategy, you've got to develop new social skills.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes to addiction, those two metaphors or analogies, they really fit in really nice, because it's not a drug problem. And it's what happens way before that. In other words, start sooner. Yeah, and mm-hmm. when we start sooner and we look at addiction and what most people would call addicts and so on and so forth, probably the number one thing that I notice is we've got to take the time to become more flexible neurologically, which is a really fancy way of I'm going to spiral around this a bit. Success is your enemy. When I say success is your enemy, many of us start out life going, if I cut grass for an hour, I can make $20.
Mm-hmm.
And so you cut grass for an hour and you make $20. And you go, well, that was cool. Let me go to the other little old lady down the street and I'll cut grass for an hour and make $20.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid, I made about $5 an hour, mm-hmm. right? So I'd cut grass for an hour and make $5. Cut grass for an hour and make $5. Success became my enemy because I became really good at trading an hour's worth of time for $5.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, when I got older, I got a job where I traded money. Or I traded time for money.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say success is your enemy, the problem with success is it makes you very good at a very narrow range.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point in time in my life, you asked about a typical day in the life of Mr. 2020,
mm-hmm.
I do about 3 hours of coaching a day where I trade time for money.
Mm-hmm.
But the bulk of my income comes from leveraged time. And what I mean by that is I produce a product that takes about 1 to 3 hours to make, and I sell it forever online.
Mm-hmm.
I put up an ad, I drive traffic to it, I have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I'm not trading time for money. I find something I'm passionate about, and I set it up in the world so that I can get paid 1,000 times for it.
Mm-hmm.
So for an hour's worth of time, I might make $7,000 to $10,000, which mm-hmm. is pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, I had to ignore my early success.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens a lot of times, I've noticed with any destructive behavior, and we'll go to, I'll call it drugs or whatever, if we find that that's, if I do my thing and it appears to make me feel better or appears to make me more functional, and that feels good, well, heck, I just found a way to feel good. I found a way that's successful. So the drug is a way to be successful, quote unquote, in feeling good or having a social strategy. Mm-hmm. So we've got to find more ways to be successful. So today I can trade time for dollars. I prefer not to,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is, I just love coaching. So mm-hmm. so I'll do it for a couple hours a day. It's great fun. It's good money. It's great fun. But I really prefer to leverage my time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a second way of being successful. If you can find at least 3 or 4 ways to be successful, you're going to have a lot more success in your life and flexibility. And it's the same with behavior. If you can find multiple ways to feel really good
uh-huh.
about life, about yourself, about what you're doing in life, about the day, then it's not going to be, I've got to have a beer to feel good. I've got to uh-huh. have a beer to be able to talk to this guy.
Right.
I've got to have a beer to get over work, uh-huh. or whatever it is, right. whatever the drug of choice is. So building in more ways to feel good, building in more ways to experience the bliss of life is really, really key from what I can tell.
Okay. One of the things that's kind of in line with what you're saying, I've been observing people that do depression, you know, and oftentimes, you know, I get people that come to us and, you know, they've been using drugs for a long time. Their brain chemistry is a little mixed up because of that. You take away the drugs and then they're depressed. And I know that some of that has to do with, you know, the neurology behind the substances they're inducing or whatever.
Right.
But some of it, I found that even after the brain chemistry is back to normal, it's like they practice depression.
Sure, absolutely.
And the more, I've worked with thousands of people, getting them off the drugs. Just getting them off the drugs doesn't solve the problem, because they have, you know, all these internal processes that they do that keeps them feeling miserable, and kind of like the opposite of what you're talking about. They're not practicing feeling good or practicing multiple ways of feeling good. They're actually doing exactly the opposite. They're practicing being miserable. They're looking for the bad things. They're having an internal dialogue that's not, you know, it's not conducive to feeling good, but rather feeling bad. And it, in a lot of cases, and I don't know what you think about this, please comment, but in a lot of cases, I think they've learned these skills from their upbringing.
Yeah, sure.
Because you meet their families and you start to notice similar traits in the thinking.
Yep.
Yeah. So what do you think about all that? And for those of us at Habilitat that are struggling to overcome these internal programs, what kind of advice would you give us on practical advice on how to practice being happy?
Well, you know, Candace Pert came out with some really interesting research, and it's just something to go on your own. But literally, we're addicted to our habitual neurological states. In other words, if you've been depressed for 21 days in a row, you've developed a habit, mm-hmm. and you're very successful at it. So you wake up the next day, and odds are you've got this wave of depression, this momentum built up behind you. So habitually, your thinking is probably going to be there. Your body's already addicted to the neuropeptides associated with depression. So if you're going to try to break yourself out of depression, you've got to change your internal dialogue, and you've got to basically, quote unquote, suffer the withdrawal of getting out of depression. Mm-hmm. So isn't that motivating, right?
So and most people would, well, just go take a pill and it doesn't instantly, but then you're addicted to something else.
Exactly. So it really is, you know, some of this is in a way so simple, but in a way it's also so, it's fascinating to me. A quick how-to, skip.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
Skip. Yeah, like we did in grade school.
Go skip around.
Yeah, go skip around. Yeah, you know, it's just the thought of it changes your neurology.
Exactly. Right?
So if thinking about it will change your Victoria's over in the back smiling as well. So if the thought of it changes your neurology, believe me, doing it will change your neurology. Plus, it'll change the neurology of anybody watching.
Okay.
Okay, so something as simple as, literally just telling yourself, stop being depressed. I got to get up. I got to do something. We make the massive things. Oh, I've got to break out of this depression. It's like this huge, massive thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to compare that to, I'm going to skip for 30 seconds. That's all. I'm just going to skip for 30 seconds. Then I can go back to being depressed for the rest of the day. I will try my best to.
Right.
And it sounds ridiculous, but it's honest to God true. So yeah, I'll give you three little things to do. One, if you're having a bad day, depression, you know, whatever, skip. Trust me, it's one of the best things that you can do. Second thing, we shared with you guys some exercises a long time ago where you're basically sitting with the head in neutral and you take a timer and you look up for a minute up to the left or up to the right. You know, you just pick a direction. I'll just say upright mm-hmm. for a minute, come back to neutral for a minute, then look up to the left for 1 minute. And what that will do, you know, it's funny. We've got these sayings. You see, cartoonists are more intelligent than psychologists.
Okay, you don't have to convince me about that one.
So, except for one. Cartoonists generally are more intelligent and observant than psychologists. And the reason I say that is if you look at Calvin and Hobbes, and you can watch Calvin go, right? And you know what he's doing. He's up to something. He's up to something.
Up to something.
Uh-huh. Or people say, hey, Jeff, things are looking up. And the eyes will go up, right. Or the chin will go down. Right. Hey, things are looking really up, right? Versus, oh, I'm feeling so down and depressed today. Okay, this is words that reflect your neurology. Mm-hmm. And so you can change the words, and that's fun and marginally effective, but mm-hmm. you can change the neurology. So literally looking up, you know, this is content-free, you know, screwing with your neurology in a fun way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, since we've all done it anyway, yeah, you know, we've all done it through, you know, drug of choice, behavior mm-hmm. of choice, whatever. Mm-hmm. So let's look up and right to the right for 60 seconds in the name of all that's holy. Don't count. Set a timer. So set a timer. Look up to the right for 60 seconds. Come back to neutral. Look up to the left for 60 seconds. Come back to neutral. That tiny little exercise will do more. You'll notice I'm talking a little faster now after mm-hmm. just doing that. Mm-hmm. That takes you into visual. It just releases energy. It's a dynamic little exercise. Take you 2 minutes a day, 3 minutes a day if you count going into neutral for 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally rewire your world. So the first thing, skip. Okay, I have to break out of this depression. I've been depressed for 21 days, 21 years, 21 months. I don't know how long. I've been mm-hmm. depressed for a long time. Don't do that. Stand up and skip. Okay. Second thing, just do this little eye exercise. Okay. 1 minute in that direction, 1 minute in that direction. Third thing, okay, skip and look up at the same time. Do it in a safe area, okay, so you don't kill yourself.
All right.
But I swear to God, I mean, people can skip and look down. Yeah, I've been doing this crazy stuff with people's neurology for years. Oh. And I've watched people go, I'll skip, and they skip and they look down, and they sort of have fun. They resist having fun. And again, they're going to have a little withdrawal from the depression compounds, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah, skip and look up. Okay, look up and skip. And I swear, those tiny little things will have profound impact on your life. The problem is this. It'll take you 5 minutes a day to do that exercise twice and to skip once, mm-hmm. right? 5 minutes a day, mm-hmm. 5 minutes out of 24 hours. 99% of the people that hear that will not do it. Mm-hmm. But you just need enough willingness, not willpower. That's mm-hmm. a whole other subject. You need just enough willingness to go, you know what? I'm going to look stupid for 60 seconds and skip. Mm-hmm. Okay? I'm just going to, set a timer. Yeah, have my buddy count to 60.
Yeah,
everybody count to 60.
We'll send you some video of us skipping around, like all 120 of us skipping around.
Nice.
You know, that'll be
nice.
That'll be a good thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
It'll change lives. I guarantee it.
All right. Very good. Go ahead.
Part of the process is, again, you want to put things in bite-sized chunks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to beat this depression thing. You just made it a big thing to beat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Versus just, I'm just going to skip. You'll notice that there's no mention of depression.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed three phases with addicts. First one is, hey man, let's go get a beer. Okay, beer's in the middle of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Second one, I haven't had a beer in 3 years, 21 minutes, 17 seconds, 18 seconds, 19 seconds, mm-hmm. 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. But beer's still in the middle of the language.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like, hey, let's go to a ball game.
Mm-hmm.
No mention of beer, no thought mm-hmm. of beer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that third phase we want to get to. And that third phase of, I'm going to skip.
Mm.
Yeah, just to skip.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, I'm going to skip to beat the depression. No, I'm going to skip. Time to skip. Mm-hmm. Schedule it in. Use Google Calendar. I love Google Calendar.
Yeah.
So we want to move what's in the center. So let's move skipping to the center.
Okay.
Cool. Neville Goddard was the godfather of the law of attraction. A lot of people don't like the law of attraction. Who cares, right? One of the things that Neville brought up was, if you want to change your life, what you want to do is you want to imagine a scene that would imply your wish has been fulfilled.
Wait, slow down. Say that again.
Oh, I will.
You want to imply?
You want to construct an imaginal scene that would imply your wish has been fulfilled.
Okay.
Okay. One of the favorite methods of Neville's to do this, and we'll get to why we're talking about this in just a second, was to have a congratulatory scene. In other words, you know, you walk up to my door, dude, you're in Australia. Whoa. Right? There's a congratulatory scene. That okay. fast, that simple. That implies that a series of events has happened to bring you to Australia. A dream of yours come true.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's some power here. And the reason there's power here, if you imagine a scene that implies the wish has been fulfilled, whatever the wish is for your life, a scene that implies the wish has been fulfilled puts it in your past. Anything in your past is a resource. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like tying your shoes or learning the alphabet.
Right.
Once it's a resource, you can draw on it. And you're no longer hoping for it or longing for it or craving for it. So construct an imaginal scene inside your mind that implies your wish has been fulfilled. Make it a congratulatory scene mm-hmm. that includes somebody else. Now, the reason I'm mentioning all this is the power of tribe. In our culture, we really live in the Lone Ranger culture. Okay, well, mm-hmm. except for the Lone Ranger, actually, in Tonto. we live in the John Wayne culture.
Right.
Right? I'm going to kick its, you know.
Right.
No, forget that. This whole tribe thing, you know, one of the things that scares people is my family, is my friends, are they going to still be with me when I'm successful? That's one of the biggest reasons why people sabotage their success anywhere in life. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they're concerned. What are my friends going to think if I change, if I get successful, if I get clean, whatever? And so if you're going to imagine your life differently, and again, this is really important. If you're going to imagine your life differently, create a scene that implies you've achieved your goal, that you've changed in the way that you've needed to change, and have someone that you love or a group of people that you love congratulating you or appreciating the change in you. This is one of the things that I've noticed everywhere in life. Yeah, when I think about people who have gotten off of, that have gotten beyond addiction, people who have become successful in life, mm-hmm. gotten married, gotten remarried. Again, the whole power of tribe is very, very important to acknowledge.
So when you say power of tribe, explain yes. that a little deeper.
Yeah. So you know, if it's, you know, back when I used to compete in sport karate as a kid, mm-hmm. If I made it all about me, it became egotistical, mm. and a lot of willpower mm-hmm. and force mm-hmm. would show up, versus the power of tribe, you know. Instead of me going, I'm the greatest, I'm the best, which invariably sets you up for a fall, the whole thing of you know what, Bob, you look great. You know, Sue, wow, congratulations, good on you.
So all of us.
All of us.
It's the we instead of the I.
Yeah, exactly. It brings the we, it brings the us into it. Mm-hmm. And again, it eliminates the ego, mm-hmm. while, again, you know, helping you just imagine and understand the people that matter most to you will love you. They will stick with you as you become a more complete you. Mm-hmm. So whatever you're doing, whatever people are doing for personal transformation, that's important to acknowledge, really important to honor. You know, all old tribal cultures did it. Mm-hmm. Ours really doesn't.
Yeah.
It's all, you hear the story, this guy, you know, he came overcome all these odds and did all these things, and he ran a marathon at 95. You know, let's meet Mr. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And even if he is Mr. Wonderful, it's not about him. It's about the tribe. It's about people coming together.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, do you do all your work here in Australia? I heard you mention something about you go once a year to the mainland U.S. or something. Are you still doing that gig?
No.
So you're based here. You're basically planted here, huh?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind visiting the U.S. once every couple of years, but it's a long...
long flight, huh? Yeah. Big journey.
It's just rough on the body, you know. Figure if you're going to travel that far... I came from the East Coast, mm-hmm. and to travel that far, it takes you one solid day to get there, mm-hmm. a solid day to get back here, then you have jet lag, you might as well go for at least 3 weeks, and mm-hmm. that's a month's worth of time, and I love home.
Yeah,
I you know. Yeah. I just... I know where everything is, and just love being here.
Yeah, it's a nice place for sure. Let's see, what else was I going to ask you? So what was the draw for Australia? What brought you here?
Basically, it was sort of like a little vacation holiday kind of thing, and popped in and met Victoria and... here we are.
Yeah, and everything just evolved, huh? Okay.
You betcha.
All right, so earlier you mentioned about PTSD.
You bet.
And you're searching for the knowledge to overcome that. Recently, in the last couple of years, we've had an influx of soldiers that have come from the recent conflict. And I have a very special place in my heart for people that go and do that kind of work,
right, exactly.
for their country, and they put their lives on the line. So anytime one comes to our program and wants help, well, I'm inclined to do whatever I can to make sure we accommodate them, because there's just not a lot of help for those guys, to be honest with you, through the government systems or whatever. But I've noticed that there are some compounded problems, not just the drug addiction issues, and through doing the intakes and whatnot. And a lot of these guys, they weren't even into drugs until they got back. And, you know, let's face it, they went over there, they did what they were ordered to do, and some of it wasn't pretty, a lot of it wasn't nice, and most of those young men have seen things that no human being should ever have to see.
That's right.
And then they're expected to come back to our society and assimilate and be normal. And they have all these feelings, you know, that they don't know how to deal with. The military doesn't teach them. Their families don't understand. And, you know, I'll be honest, I don't even completely understand. You know, I saw some pretty rough things out on the street and in the ghettos and in the drug houses and whatnot during my, you know, insane periods or whatever. But nothing like what these guys have seen. And, you know, it's not uncommon for somebody to come in and we get them off the drugs and they start to have nightmares. And,
sure, absolutely.
You know, they keep replaying memories of their buddy getting blown up by an IED, or I had one gentleman who was at a checkpoint and he was ordered to fire on anybody that doesn't stop, and it was a family and they didn't understand, and he let them out. Mother,
sure, absolutely.
Kids, you know, the husband, everybody, and he feels rotten about it, but he had to do it because he was terrified. And, you know, they go over there and they get put in this heightened state of awareness,
sure.
And then they come back and they're stuck in it.
Yep.
So I've been finding that there's additional challenges that we face when working with these guys and girls, even in some cases. What advice would you have for both us and for them to deal with these issues, especially since, you know, you've been through your own traumatic stuff and obviously have done well overcoming that? What do you think we should do? What's your suggestions?
PTSD for me shifted when I realized what PTSD was my imagination out of control.
Imagination out of control.
Yep.
Yeah.
It doesn't demean the situation at all. But what PTSD was for me was the imagination beyond my control.
Mm-hmm.
We all are like that generally in this culture. You know, the imagination does whatever it wants, and most people don't do much about it. The reason why most people don't do much about it is they don't sort the difference between what's imaginary and what's physical. So from the experiential side, one of the things that I'd suggest would be we need to be able to sort out the difference between what's in here and what's out here. So in one of my courses, I do a little exercise where I talk about a young man. He's about 15 years old, and he's walking up to two young girls. And he obviously is interested in one of the young girls. And he's walking up, and when he's about 10, 15 feet away, the two girls look at each other and share a giggle. And at that point, the young man stops, deflates, turns around, and walks away. And I know, being a 48-year-old guy, the girls, you know, were interested. Okay, they were excited that the kid's walking over. Finally, mm-hmm. some young bloke's finally walking over to say
mm-hmm.
hi.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked people, what did the young man respond to? What put him in the tailspin? And a lot of people tell me, oh, the girl's giggle did. Well, the girl's giggle did not. What put him in the tailspin was what he imagined about it. And literally...
And that was all stuff he constructed.
That was all stuff he constructed.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's PTSD or not PTSD, every human being does that all day long. We mm-hmm. add meaning to what we perceive through the senses. And so what we get to do is to start to sort out. The first step, from what I can tell, is sorting out what's sensory and mm-hmm. sorting out what's constructed inside the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are experienced as real, mm-hmm. and they're both important, because if you're going to take a business idea and construct a business out of it,
mm-hmm.
that's imagination coming to physical reality.
Right.
So we need both. We need the imagination working for us, and we need sensory data working for us. And so just a couple quick thoughts. One, well, you know, every day, if you have PTSD, or even if you just want to improve your life, find a way to become more sensory data oriented. One of the exercises that I've taught for years involves finding a little spot and going and sitting at it for 15 minutes a day, every day, for a year.
Hmm.
So every day at 7 in the morning, walk outside, sit in the chair, and just sit where you sit and notice what you notice. And that's going to do a couple things. One, it's going to get you out of your head. and back into your senses. You want to lose your mind to come back to your senses. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So you go outside, you sit at your spot, and you spend 15 minutes for a year in one spot, same time every day, and you're going to become so intimate with that spot. It's really going to blow your mind. Mm-hmm. And if you're smart, take a little journal. Mm-hmm. Journal afterwards. Mm-hmm. Spend your 15 minutes in the spot, journal afterwards. If you want to really multiply your results, do it the same time in the morning and the same time in the evening for a year. And again, what you discover about this sacred spot will totally boggle your mind. So that's step one, coming back to your senses more. Step two, twice a day for 15 minutes, lay down, notice your breathing, get nice and relaxed, and construct an imaginal scene that would imply a wish that you have in life has been fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Nice little phrase.
Kind of like the other thing that you were talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and the point of that is to start running your imagination deliberately.
Deliberately.
With an outcome.
In a direction that you want.
Yes.
Instead of...
Right. Yeah. So, two things are going to happen if you choose to invest. Let's just say you do both exercises once a day for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, exercise one, you go to your sacred sit spot and you keep your eyes open. You keep your ears open. You notice what's going on. You sniff the air. You become sensory-oriented for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. At some other point in time of the day, you take 15 minutes, you lay down, take some deep breaths, get in touch with something on the inside, and construct an imaginal scene that would imply your wish has been fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Okay? And if you do that, now you're working with the imagination in a direction that you want. And you're going to notice, you know, most of the people on this planet have no idea if they're seeing something or imagining seeing something. They have no clue which direction they've got the camera lens pointed. And so this tiny little exercise is going to start sorting out physical versus imaginal reality. Both are good. We need both. But if we don't have them sorted out, things get a little weird. So I would really highly suggest that. And if you think about it, if we go way back in human history, when we lived in tribes and clans and lived close to the earth, you had to be able to be sensory data oriented, or else you became lunch.
Yeah, and you got eaten.
Yes, and exactly. You also had to be able to go in and imagine potential. Otherwise, you couldn't construct new tools.
Right.
You couldn't construct a village.
Right.
So you needed both. Mm-hmm. And in our culture... our culture doesn't give us a reason to sort
us down
it out.
In that area. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. What else is going on? What have you stumbled onto recently? What else do you think is significant? What else do you think I need to go back and tell them about our experience here or any of those things?
Got it. What we are is consciousness. You're the spark behind the eyes that animates the body. That's it. Being consciousness, the spark behind the eyes that animates the body and perceives through the body, means a couple things. One, that you're not the meat suit. The meat suit's great to have.
The meat suit.
Yeah, I love the meat suit. I love hugging my wife's meat suit. I love giving you a hug today. Meat suit to meat suit,
yeah.
Good stuff. But you're not the meat suit. And our whole culture is predicated on threats to the meat suit.
Ah, yeah.
You can't threaten consciousness. You can direct it, but there's no need to protect it. But, yeah. So we've got to protect this thing.
Right.
It's great. I've got a car. I take care of the car. I've got a meat suit. I take care of the meat suit. But I'm the operant power. I'm the perceptive power that uses the darn thing. And so if you start to explore that or just adopt that, I mean, real simple phrases can go far. You know, Mr. 20, you're not the meat suit. You know, just remembering that a couple times a day is a really good way to begin things. Because if you notice you're not the meat suit, or if you begin to ponder, yeah, I'm not the meat suit, what am I? Well, I'm what perceives and operates the meat suit. Well, that's pretty cool, right? Opening yourself up to that as a possibility will help you notice it. And the more you notice it, you really get what's possible for you. And again, when I say you're not the meat suit can't perceive the mind. The mind can't perceive the meat suit. So mind is a little closer to what you are. And if you start to notice, you know, I can't possibly be the meat suit. The meat suit's had some problems. But that's all right. I'm not even the mind. The mind is running into some problems. But I'm not the mind. I'm what actually perceives the mind or animates the mind. If you keep moving back a little bit and really get in touch with what you are, you're going to notice. You're going to notice what really needs to be noticed. And that's going to eliminate a lot of problems from life. I don't want to say more about that, but it's really it's good stuff.
Okay. All right. So you think you'll ever be one of these times? I mean, your family still lives on the mainland, right? So
yeah.
Maybe eventually one day you'll go back.
I love you said the mainland. We call it the states here.
Oh yeah. Well, because I live in Hawaii, so it's the mainland.
Yeah.
Forget about that. I'm not in Hawaii anymore.
Yeah.
Not in Kansas either. The United States, the states.
Yeah. Yes.
When you travel there, do you ever come to Hawaii?
Haven't yet. I'd love to, though.
So would you consider sometime in the future if you pop over there for a day or two and, you know, sort of split your trip up, we'll put you up over there and you can come meet everybody and it would be a lot of fun.
I'd say for more than a day or two.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, that's just a day or two is too fast.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot to see there, too.
Yeah.
All right, so that was an interview with Jeff Nash from Habilitat.com. Habilitat Hawaii is a long-term substance abuse treatment and intensive vocational training center, and he was interviewing Mr. 2020, and you can find him at freeneville.com. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and you can find me at spiritualshow.com, and I wanted to take your calls and your suggestions on the new format of the show. I'm moving towards happiness rather than spirituality, just happiness, because everyone who's on a spiritual journey, what are they really searching for? They're searching for happiness and inner peace and a better life in this life, right? So I would love to hear your feedback and your ideas for the new format of the show, which is sort of moving and changing right now. I haven't set an actual date. I don't know if I should change the name or keep it as Synchronicity, maybe call it Synchronicity the Happiness Show. So again, I'd love your feedback. 604-822-2487 or email me spiritualshow@gmail.com. We'll be back with more Synchronicity in just a moment.
The 37th Annual Vancouver Folk Music Festival comes to Jericho Beach Park July 18th to the 20th. Over 60 acts from Joan Baez, Andrew Bird, Amos Lee, and Mary Lambert to Ozo Motley and Mauritania's Noura Mintsemali. There's a world of amazing music coming to your own backyard. The Vancouver Folk Music Festival. Info and tickets at thefestival.bc.ca.
I'm gonna be round my vegetables. I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all.
Sprouts, you've ate here before. Community Eats is back for the summer.
We are your local food co-op.
We are your volunteer opportunity.
We are your meeting place.
We are your nutritious Friday lunch.
We are sustainability.
We are community.
Eats every Friday.
Come by with a reusable container, donate, and tell us what community means to you. Friday, 11:30 to 3 p.m. Food, fun, friends.
With the vast amount of changes happening in the world, it's almost impossible to get a clear picture of what's really going on.
We are trapped within the logic of capitalism, leaving us unable to imagine what comes next.
The Extra Environmentalist brings the perspectives of people who can see the whole picture and are ready for whatever comes our way.
Tune in to the Extra Environmentalist every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
This is the viewpoint that makes all places the same to you.
Coming up in just a few minutes here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific. So stick around for that. I'm going to play a song, I believe. Yeah, I play a song. So again, send me your feedback, spiritualshow@gmail.com. If you have ideas for what I should name the new show, some of the guests and topics that you want me to cover related to happiness, health, wellness, and just feeling good and having a happy life. Yeah, I originally was wanting to do something about to help people with depression. And then I thought, well, rather than focusing on depression, how about I focus on happiness? So that's where the show change came from. And again, I really want you to be a part of this show. So email me with your feedback and your suggestions for the new show format, spiritualshow@gmail.com. Here is some Cantoria, which is a father and a daughter singing together in Hebrew, I believe. And yeah, they're a local Vancouver band, I guess. Cantoria is the name. So here we are on Synchronicity.
Standing close, I am war's last ghost. I've been writing these letters to you. Tell a sinner's story about his brave old daddy and how he tried to show the world the truth. Cause it's a dirty life, dirty should I let I could just go on? It's a kiss of life, the rose of death, the feeling of regret I have. So tell me why, tell me why, oh, I just can't go home. Son, live your life safe. You're gonna have to be brave and be there, and be there for your mama. And when you grow old, oh, and life turns cold, I just pray to God you'll be there to guide her through. Through a dirty life, a dirty world filled with lies, so they can hurt. And I wish that I wish that I, that I could just go home. It's a kiss of life, the rose of death, the feeling of regret I have. So tell me why, so tell me why, oh, why just. But I'll tell you how, my boy, through these words, my life, my joy, as I remain still in peace. And I'll always hold you close through the heavens and the Holy Ghost. I'll always be by your side. Through your first love, through your first love, I'll be there for your last dying breath. Through your first love, through your first love, I'll be there for your last dying breath. And when both the wind could come down, watching bullets from the sun now, as I fall to my knees, Lord, oh, carry me. And when both the wind may come down, the price for what to my son I'll never see. Don't forget about me. It's a dirty life, a dirty world, filled with lies so they can hurt. And I wish that I, oh, that I could just go home. It's a kiss of life, the rose of death, the feeling of regret I had. So tell me why, tell me why, I just can't go home. It's a dirty life, it's a dirty world, filled with all of these lies, so they can make it hurt. It's a kiss of life, it's a rose of death. Of all the regrets I have, 'cause it's a dirty life.